Okay. Hello and welcome, welcome, welcome to the 54th episode. My God, 54th episode of the PEM podcast. Podcast.
The Psychic Eye Mysteries podcast.
Wow. Wow. I can't even get words out now. Like,
this
that's
is going
bad.
To be a fun day. Fun
seriously,
day.
Seriously. We've got Mercury retrograde going on right now too, right? Mercury
We do.
Retrograde, an eclipse. Some other planet's doing something else, right? Like it's just mayhem.
Yes.
Mayhem.
It's not a good day to be out and about. That's
right?
why
your,
I'm staying.
Your horoscope was terrible.
Mine was terrible today. I'm like, I'm just going to stay home.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not going to talk to anybody.
You're
Oops.
At risk of dying.
I'm at risk of getting in a car accident. So I'm not driving today.
What? Oh my God. That really said that?
Yeah.
Oh my God. Well, that's terrifying. So
yes.
I'm zooming in on you. I think you're fine. I really
Thank
do.
You.
I think you're
That's
fine.
Because I'm not driving today.
Yes, exactly. Stay inside. It's the opposite of get out.
Yeah, get
right?
out of the house.
Stay in. Yeah.
Thank
That'd be
you
nice
for
if we had that
scanning and
voice.
letting me know.
Yeah, exactly. Everything's fine down in the cellar. Nothing evil down there, but stay inside. Oh, goodness, goodness. Anyway, 54th episode of the PEM podcast, Psychic Eye Mystery Podcast. I'm your host, Victoria Laurie, with my schmabulous sister, Sunday, coming at you. Wait a minute, this is a really good one. For today's true crime, I got some decent hits. So, like, it was really clear, which is always great. I don't know if I'm right. Don't know if I'm wrong, but this is what I got. So I get to kind of talk about that. Okay. Anecdotes. I'm going to segue away from the usual, you know, so-and-so came through and it was really cool and they gave me these clues, blah, 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 and go into what I also do, which is predictions. So my readings start often, always, with keying in on the other side, seeing who wants to come forward and say hello to my clients, and then I jump into a future forecast. So reading for a new client the other day, and she had, I don't even remember who came through. I think it was one or two people came through, identified them. The hits were solid. It was great. Moved into a future forecast for her. And so I'm talking about her employment. And I asked her, I said, are you self-employed? She said, yes. I said, okay. I said, there was this clue in my mind's eye. I kept seeing gravestones. So I said, do you visit graveyards? She's like, no. And I'm like, are you planning on visiting graves? She's like, no. And I'm like, I can't figure this out, right? And I'm like, it's so crazy. I said, there's this feeling like for work that you have to go to a place where there are dead people, like a graveyard. And so she goes, oh. She's like, well, I'm an estate. She goes to estate sales. She's a vintage clothing store seller. And so she goes to estate sales, you know, after people have passed away and the relatives are selling off their stuff. I just thought that was such a cool way of giving that to me, right? Like headstone, she goes to where the headstones are.
Yeah.
And then things kind of went south there. So sometimes, you know, I'm trying to piece together these sort of discordant parts and make them sound coherent into some insight for my clients. And my hope is always that I'll say the thing and then they will recognize it and we can, it's say the thing, confirmation, say another thing, confirmation, right? So I start talking about her business and I said to her, I said, are you trying to take this to the next level? And she's like, I don't know what next level that would be. And I'm like, it's so crazy. I said, because I keep seeing this male in an authoritative position who's giving you advice. And I feel like his advice is solid. It's super sound and it has to do with your business. And she's giving me the, you know, lowered brow, doesn't get it. You know, she's like shaking her head. And it's so distracting that I have to like look away because I can't, right? Because there's this feeling inside of you where you're like, why isn't she saying yes and recognizing this? I swear to God, she should recognize this. This shouldn't be something that she should be confused about, right? So there's this level of like frustration where you're like, I know this is solid intel. I can't understand why she's not saying yes. So I go on and move on to the next topic, but then that comes up again and I repeat it again and they're still like, she's not getting it. And I'm like, so finally, at the very end of the session, after most of her questions, after I turned it over to her and she's asked me, you know, this, that, and the other, she says, so I have a dear friend of mine who's a doctor and he's about to move to the Caribbean to open up a practice there and he wants me to come work for him. And I'm like, so the male authoritative figure giving you advice about your career? She's like, oh, like, yeah. Oh, so, you know, but you had a really good point on that. Cause it really frustrates me, because I want them to get there. I want them to get there faster.
You're like so patient with your clients.
I know.
Really patient.
Well, it just, you know, I don't like to be wrong.
What?
I know when I'm right. And so when someone's resistant to what I'm saying, it's almost like someone telling me I'm wrong when I know I'm right.
Yes, you know? I do.
Yeah. So you had mentioned, you know, some people take me
very literally.
Yeah.
Like I think they're so focused on what it is you're saying in the moment that they're not able to step back and sort of see the whole picture. Right. So it's like, okay, she said this. Right. And they're piecing it together, but maybe not having time to digest it.
Yeah. Well, readings are in their own right. They are kind of giant puzzles. And I rely on my clients as much as I rely on information from the other side of my own intuition to fill in the blanks. So I can kind of circle it and describe it, but someone else has to say, oh, okay, what you're describing is a banana, you know, it's yellow, it's long, you know, oh, a banana. So, so that can be, I can be frustrating. But she was a lovely woman, absolutely lovely woman. You know, and I was vindicated in the end because the authoritative figure showed up in a great way. And what had been something that was going to be kind of a, you know, a throwaway, like, you know, he wants me to come work for him, like uproot my life. Like, how can I do that? And I'm like, no, you need to. This is awesome. You must do this. This is an adventure. Go have it. You know?
Wow.
So anyway, that was kind of cool. But we were talking earlier as well about how, some people don't want to sign up for a face-to-face, you know, encounter with me. Given that, I've decided to start a Patreon page. For those of you who don't know what Patreon is, it's a subscriber platform. And you subscribe for either, you know, a monthly subscription or a yearly subscription, whatever it is that you'd like. Usually the fees for those subscriptions are nominal. Mine is going to be $2.50 a month. And I've decided to do a Dear Victoria. So my favorite thing, I read the newspaper every single day. And my favorite thing is to read the advice columns. So like Dear Abby, Miss Manners, Carolyn Hacks. Like I love to read those because you get to kind of like peer into people's lives and think about how you would respond to their request for an advice. It's kind of like, you know, am I the asshole? Like people ask, you know, AI TA, right? So, and oftentimes I'm like, that's great advice, or that was a little harsh. Sometimes it can be really mean. They can be really mean, you know. You feel bad for the person that was writing in because they write in with, you know, good intent. So since I'm in the advice giving business, I thought this might be fun. So if you have a topic that you would like a little bit of insight in, a specific topic, it needs to be specific.
A specific question.
Right. So instead of like, you know, can you give me career advice? I'm not going to answer that. That's not going to happen. Right. But if you say I'm facing a promotion with a lot more responsibility, might tie up some of my free time. I don't know if I'll be happy giving up that free time because I'm earning more money or if it's more of a sacrifice than I'm thinking right now and not worth the extra money. That I can answer all day long. So
the topics that you typically give advice on are what?
Name it, but pretty much it's career, romance, relationships, finances,
travel,
transportation, vacations, stuff like that.
And family, right? And family too?
that's usually covered in relationships, but yeah, certainly family. So if you kind of give me a little bit of background on a specific topic, then I can key in on it remotely, so to speak. I don't necessarily have to have a super strong connection to you. So if you would like to send an inquiry to me, please send it to victoria@victorialaurie.com. That's the email address. And I will be picking and choosing amongst those and posting replies to some or all of them, depending on how many I get, on the Patreon page, which is in the middle of being built by our schmabulous web designer. Mm-hmm. Right? Is that what Grace is? Grace is our web designer. She's wonderful. So as soon as that finishes, which should be this week, I'll be able to launch that. So.
And in the meantime, you're looking forward to getting questions. So you
very much, prepare. Very yeah. much, because I think it could be a lot of fun. And I think it could be kind of addictive, you know, and, you know, you never know how something that you're going through may mirror what something someone else is going through. And the advice that's given for that person can be applied to your life. I find that a lot, actually. I find that happens a lot in life. So could be fun. Dear Victoria, send me an inquiry. You can do it anonymously, create your own little, you know, moniker, pen name or whatever, you know, stuck in Seattle, whatever. I will post a reply on the Patreon page. You will have to subscribe in order to read the reply, but it's only $2.50 a month. So, or it's like $24 for the year. I think I'm doing $24 for the year. Nominal. Yeah. So, yeah.
That's... Compared to a price for a reading with you or compared to pretty much anything, that is a nominal fee.
Yeah. So, and fun reading too. You know, you get to like be a little voyeur in there, which can be fun. Okay. I'm going to plug whenever again. Don't fuss about the black line through there. That's my author copy. And when. You don't like my.
You need to pre-record.
I can't. You know what's so funny? I can't promote a book without starting it with the do do do. I think it's like my good luck thing.
Somebody help me.
Honestly, you know. Anyway,
anybody with musical talents that wants to submit a do do do, please let us know.
We'll pay you $2.50 every time we play that. Or waive your subscription fee for the Patreon page. Exactly. Anyway, okay, so whenever got released last week. It's doing great. I'm getting a lot of emails with the subject header. Thank you for the heads up about the tissues. So yes, this has some emotion in it. Might bring you. So I have a dear friend in Austin who was a former Austin Police Department detective. And I love sending her my books because I'm like, oh, this time she's not going to be able to figure this one out. She gets them every single time. Drives me insane, like insane, because I keep trying to stump her and she just gets there. Sometimes it takes her longer, right? Sometimes it takes her to like the last chapter, but usually by the middle of the book, she's like, that person did it. I'm like, how did you get that? Anyway, so she sent me a text and she said, I'm gonna go work out now. And she's like, I don't know how that's gonna go because I can't even see because my eyes are swollen shut from crying. I'm like, oh honey. So
you made a hard-nosed detective cry.
I know,
with your story.
I know. It's all the feels, everybody. It's all the feels. It's not like all sad. There are some funny and suspenseful and, you know, really wonderful moments. Absolutely. It doesn't have a sad ending. It has a good end. So it's worth it to get to the end. And you know what's coming because I start off with it. Boom, here you go. This tragedy happened. So I'm spoon feeding you the tragedy ahead of time so that you can brace yourself. So anyway, whenever. Boop, boop, boop. Amazon.com. Head there. You can get your ebook or your trade paperback. And we are shopping because everybody's like, when's it coming out on Audible? Well, you know, I don't have a producer in my back pocket or a voiceover actress in my back pocket. So my agent is currently shopping for an audio rights producer team that might want to produce it on audio. So it would be available on Audible. But
not yet.
Yeah.
Not available.
That hasn't even happened yet. The deal part hasn't happened yet. And usually once the deal is signed, it's still 6 months beyond that. So that will not be happening soon. If it happens, I definitely will be, you know, crowing from the rooftops about it. But Hark, I hear a doop doo doo doo. There is news. I would like to rewrite like Romeo and Juliet, right? And have Juliet just come to the terrace and go doop doo doo, and Romeo would be
Shakespeare's rolling in his grave right now. I'm just saying.
Anyway, so Whenever is actually it's a standalone story, but most people are reading When prior to, or rereading When prior to. When is a YA novel. Whenever is a new adult college romance kind of novel. If you're beyond the age of 25, you'll still enjoy it. So yeah, but you can get both together. Amazon's doing this frequently, bought together, and I'm like, yes. So go ahead and buy your copies of Whenever and When. And if you could do me a favor, and if you read it, and I don't care if you like it or not. Well, I do care. I do care that you like it. But if you, even if you don't, it's fine to gripe on Amazon. I need some reviews that really helps the algorithm. So a sentence, 2, 20. I'm not going to limit you. But if you'd like to leave me a review, that would be phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal.
Now, so, a review is different from a rating. Rating is simple stars. A review is actually posting some comments about what you thought of the book.
Yeah.
And so far, from what I've seen, your reviews are very, very positive, in addition to the ratings,
right?
5 stars.
Yeah.
But, you know, well worth the wait. Masterful, loved it.
That's my favorite, masterful.
Yeah.
I've never been called masterful about anything before. Well, maybe, you know, masterful at falling down, masterful at being clumsy, masterful at dropping something on my foot, like that I'm used to being masterful on, but like the story, I chest puffed on that one. That was awesome. Thank you.
This is my favorite book by Victoria Laurie. I did not write that.
No relatives have chimed in. None. No one related to me has been willing to help me out.
Okay, let's just dial that back for a second, because that was Sandy, can you please, let me just be clear.
No, right, for now, the reviews. For the reviews.
I get
the
it.
Reviews. You right, absolutely right have now,
that meal. Right now, I'm reading your next Kat Gilley book, Coaching right. Fire. Okay. Yep. And I'm irritated that I am not right now continuing to be able to read it because we're doing this damn podcast. Oh, so
that's
so,
music to my ears. I love that. I love that. Thank you. Thank you. So you like it? Well, Sandy, I don't know. You haven't given me any feedback.
Because I'm reading it
a minute and a half, and I haven't gotten any feedback yet.
Minute and a half. Yes, I am in the middle and enjoying it very much, and you know, turning those pages as fast as I can.
You're awesome. Sandy does all of my proofreading, and she has
an don't blame me for misspelled words. That's not me.
I'm telling you, she's amazing at like you said this on this page, but this over here on that page. Nope. Doesn't seem.
You're going to kill me because I found something that was inconsistent and I went back to book one.
Oh, shit. No, that's not something to kill you for. That's something to be very grateful for, because, you know, that would show up in an Amazon review. Absolutely. So
there you go. I had to go back to Coach to Death.
Researching.
Find what I was looking for.
Yeah. Yeah. She's not just good at researching true crime people. She is like a devil with the details, which I so appreciate. You have no idea. I so appreciate you. So anyway, okay. So that I'm done. It's over to you now. Over to you.
55 minutes later. Okay.
Oh, shit. All right. Take it away, Sands. Take it
away. All right. So this case was recommended to us by Mary Porter. So thank you, Mary, for offering us this very interesting case. It's a It's about a gentleman. I shouldn't call him a gentleman. It's about a man named Robert William Fisher. He is an American fugitive wanted by the FBI for allegedly slaughtering his family and blowing up their Scottsdale, Arizona home on April 10th, 2001. While there have been numerous reported sightings of Fisher, especially shortly after the murders, after 22 years on the run, authorities question whether or not Fisher is alive or is now well and long dead. He was born on April 13, 1961 in Brooklyn, New York, to his father, William Fisher, and his mother, Jan. And along with his two sisters, he was raised by both parents until his mother suddenly left the family and the couple divorced in 1976 when Robert was 15 years old. Following the messy divorce, Robert and his sisters moved to Tucson, Arizona with their father. Following his graduation from high school, he enlisted in the United States Navy and applied to the elite Navy SEALs, but did not make the cut. He married Mary Cooper in 1987, and they had two children, Bobby and Brittany. He worked as a firefighter in California, but was forced to retire after suffering a debilitating back injury. He and his family then moved to Arizona, where he pursued a career in the medical field and worked as a surgical catheter technician and a respiratory therapist. Fisher prided himself on being a devoted family man. However, his marriage to Mary was tumultuous, rife with loud arguments and threats, and he displayed cruel and controlling and at times violent behavior toward his family. An avid outdoorsman, hunter, and fisherman since he was a young adult, friends also took note of Fisher's disturbing behavior on hunting trips and other outdoor activities. In one case, after killing an elk, he began smearing its blood on his face, and on another outing, he snuck up behind a family that was picnicking and emptied his gun into the air. Although Fisher had been an active participant in the Scottsdale Baptist Church men's ministry, a few months before murdering his family, he had begun to withdraw from church activities. Marital counseling with a senior church pastor hadn't helped, and according to some of his friends, Fisher spoke of committing suicide because he was despaired over the state of his marriage. Former neighbor Wade Resnick reported that they did not have a happy marriage. They screamed constantly. Everybody heard it. You could hear it in the house next door, and you never really heard him scream, which was kind of weird. I mean, he had a way about him, but you never heard him scream. You always heard his wife screaming. Things like, "You're worthless. I could have done better than you. We should get a divorce." While Fisher told a hunting companion that he was renewing his commitment to his faith and marriage because he could not live without his family, a few weeks before her own murder, Mary told several friends that she was going to divorce her husband. At around 10 p.m. on April 9, 2001, a neighbor reported hearing a loud argument coming from inside the Fisher home. However, authorities were not called to the residence until 8:42 a.m. the next morning, when the Fisher's house exploded into flames. The intensity of that explosion was felt by residents within a half-mile radius and caused the front brick wall of the Fisher's house to collapse. As firefighters battled the inferno, they experienced a series of smaller secondary explosions believed to be caused by either rifle ammunition or paint cans, which forced them to keep their distance. Fortunately, firefighters were able to keep the blaze with 20-foot-high flames from spreading to other homes. Once the fire had been extinguished, investigators searched the rubble and discovered the burned bodies of a woman and two children found lying in their respective beds. The barely recognizable victims were identified as Mary, age 38, Brittany, age 12, and Bobby, age 10. An autopsy determined that Mary Fisher had died from a gunshot wound to the back of her head, and both Brittany and Bobby had had their throats slashed from ear to ear. Police theorized that Fisher killed his family sometime between 9:30 and 10:15 p.m. on April 9th, and then drove Mary's Toyota 4Runner to a local bank where he was caught on an ATM security camera at 10:43 p.m., withdrawing $280. Police believe the motive behind the murders was because Fisher was threatened by Mary's intent to divorce him, and he did not want Brittany and Bobby to go through what he did as a child when his parents divorced. Arson investigators determined that Fisher spread an accelerant throughout the house and then disconnected the furnace gas line from the back of the Fisher's house, causing it to fill with gas, which was ignited by a candle that Fisher had lit. The slow-burning candle allowed for the gas from the gas line to accumulate and then descend into the flame hours after it had been lit. Authorities figured Fisher attempted to accomplish three things from the house explosion. One, to conceal evidence of his crimes. Two, to cause the police to think that he had perished in the fire along with his family. And three, to provide Fisher up to a 10-hour head start to evade authorities. On April 14, 2001, Robert William Fisher was named as an official and to date the only person of interest in the case. Arizona Department of Public Safety officers were instructed in a statewide bulletin to arrest him. 6 days later, on April 20th, the last physical evidence of Fisher's whereabouts surfaced when police found Mary's Toyota 4Runner parked in a lot in Tonto National Forest near Young, Arizona, about 100 miles north of Scottsdale. Hiding under the vehicle in an agitated state was the family dog, Blue, a Labrador retriever. Inside the truck, investigators found an Oakland Raiders hat identical to the one that Fisher was seen wearing on the ATM footage captured on the night of the murders. Although police searched the immediate area around the Fisher's vehicle, including one of a dozen caves nearby, there was no sign of Fisher. Several professional cavers have suggested that Fisher used the caves, which form a complex underground network extending for miles beneath the surface, as a secure hiding place before either escaping to another location, committing suicide, or dying in one of the caves due to lack of oxygen. In the years since the murders, cavers have explored the area searching for Fisher, but they have never turned up any evidence about his location. Mary's Toyota was discovered less than a mile from the Fort Apache Indian Reservation, and although a set of footprints led to and onto the reservation, police never searched the sacred territory. More than 100 officers conducted a manhunt of the mountainous terrain. However, the search was called off after a few days when their efforts proved fruitless. Days after the police released the news about the Fisher manhunt, a couple came forward to report that they had seen a man resembling Fisher walking along the nearby Young Road several days before the discovery of Mary's car. Authorities then heard from Lori Greenbeck, an acquaintance of the Fisher family, who reported that shortly before April 10th, Lori's husband and Fisher had gone camping in the area where Mary's truck had been found, an area that Fisher was very familiar with. And in retrospect, Lori's husband said he believed Fisher was scouting the area. Investigators also discovered that the night before the murders, Fisher's family attended a hunting safety class while he was shopping for camping-related supplies at nearby stores. On July 19, 2001, an Arizona state arrest warrant was issued charging Fisher with 3 counts of first-degree murder and 1 count of arson. Shortly thereafter, he was declared a fugitive, and a federal arrest warrant was issued by the U.S. District Court for the District of Arizona, charging him with unlawful flight to avoid prosecution. A little over a year following the murders, on June 29, 2002, the FBI named Fisher as the 475th fugitive to be placed on its 10 most wanted list, with a reward of up to $100,000 for information leading to his capture. By April 2003, 2 years after the deaths of Mary, Brittany, and Bobby, the FBI had received hundreds of leads. Unfortunately, all reported sightings of Fisher have been either inconclusive or false. On November 3, 2021, Fisher was removed from the FBI 10 Most Wanted list. Because of the extensive publicity the Fisher case received during its nearly 20 years on the list has not resulted in a successful location and/or capture, the case no longer fulfills that requirement, the FBI has said. Despite being removed from the top 10 list, Fisher remains a wanted fugitive. There are several theories about what became of Robert William Fisher. One, he committed suicide. Given the length of time since his disappearance without any trace, the limited amount of money he had with him at the time he vanished, and that he had talked about ending his life, many believe that Fisher either died by his own hand or perished somewhere in the wilderness near where Mary's car was discovered. Two, with ties to Florida and New Mexico, some believe he assumed a new identity and started a whole new life. Fisher may have hitchhiked out of the area before Mary's car was discovered, and either relocated to a small town where he earned a living as a handyman earning cash, or moved to a big city and blended in. Three, he crossed the U.S. border into Latin America, which police considered a possibility as pre-9/11 border security was much more lax, and in 2009, a hostile encounter in Guatemala between tourists and a man said to resemble Fisher was reported. Four, he died after years as a fugitive without his remains being identified. In the short term, Fisher may have relied on his survival skills and lived in the wilderness near Payson, where his wife's car was discovered, but survival experts believe that it was not a sustainable long term, as it would have been very challenging to find food and shelter in that type of an environment. Plus, no evidence has ever been produced to indicate that someone was living in the wooded area. Then in October 2021, officers from the Pinal County Sheriff's Office were called to a location within Arizona's state trust lands after someone discovered human remains in the desert. Due to an advanced state of decomposition, law enforcement officials were unable to identify the remains. However, authorities created and issued a composite sketch of what the person might have looked like and suggested that the male victim was at least 40 years old and possibly of mixed ancestry. Police estimated the victim was killed sometime within the last 6 months to 3 years. Shortly after publicly asking for help in identifying this unknown male, popular opinion suggested that the remains belonged to Robert William Fisher, However, the Pinal County Sheriff's Office indicated that it's unlikely the remains are Fisher's, as Fisher is 100% Caucasian, and the anthropologic forensic check determined that the remains belong to someone with multiple ethnicities. At the time of his disappearance, Fisher stood about 6 feet tall, weighed 190 pounds, and wore his hair cut short and cropped to his head. If he is alive today, the now 62-year-old would bear little resemblance to the Robert Fisher of 2001. Some investigators have conceded that they may never learn what happened to Robert William Fisher. Perhaps Victoria knows. So sources for this article include Wikipedia, Robert William Fisher, Newsweek, do you recognize this man? Police ask public to check photo to help identify human remains, by Jenny Fick, 12/15/21. Phoenix New Times, not so cold case, 15 years after the murders, FBI receives new tips on the most wanted fugitive, Robert Fisher, by Shanna Hogan, July 22nd, 2016. FBI removes Robert Fisher from 10 most wanted fugitives list, by Fox 10 Phoenix staff, published November 3rd, 2021. So what do you think happened, B?
I don't know. No, I'm kidding.
You're hilarious.
I have no clue. I read this case and we had talked about it a little bit before I actually read it. And it was pretty clear right off the bat as we started to read it or started to talk about it that I was like, he committed suicide. There's no doubt in my mind that he committed suicide. So then as I was reading where the Toyota 4Runner was found, two images came to my mind because my radar's dialed up. The first image was, I believe it's from the movie 6 Days, Seven Nights with Anne Heche and Harrison Ford. Remember that one? Where they are like trying to go through the jungle to try and find either water or someone who can help them. And they stumble upon a World War II plane, and there's a skeleton hanging from a parachute, right? So that comes into my brain. At the same time, the memory of, sad, but the memory of the father of a friend of mine committed suicide by hanging. So those two came in, boop, kind of together. So it's interesting that everyone's been looking for Robert's remains on the ground. I don't believe he's on the ground, or if he's decomposed to the point where, you know, his remains fell. I believe that he climbed a tree and I believe he hung himself. Totally based on those two images. I have nothing else to go on other than those two images were pretty clear in my mind, especially the parachuter hanging from a tree high up. So this is a guy who is familiar with hunting elk and deer, probably would have created or had a tree blind before. So he would have been familiar with climbing trees and being up high, I suspect, because most hunters do. You know, most hunters are familiar with shooting down rather than shooting up or shooting across. So it's my thinking that because he knew those woods, he knew where to go, what tree to climb, and how to do the deed. The $280 is interesting because I think a lot of people are sort of fixated on what's 280 for. It's an odd amount. And my own experience is if I want a certain number or certain amount of cash in my wallet, I will deduct from the amount of cash that I have from the ATM. So if I want $500 and I have 220, I'll go to the ATM and pull out $280, right? To make an even 500. So it's my thinking that he had a certain amount on him and he wanted an even number. So that's why he drew $280 rather than $300. So it's a little compulsive thing, I think. I also think it's interesting because as I was looking at him, I was reminded of another a guy I did a while ago who was definitely on the spectrum, on the Asperger's spectrum. And obviously I didn't date this individual for long because I'm very emotive and he was blunt. And I have a feeling a lot of the difficulty in their marriage was because Robert was emotionally unavailable and he was really unable to connect emotionally, which would actually contribute to the odd behavior. So if he's not really getting social cues, he might think to do things that would cause a reaction from other people, like smear blood on his face, like shoot a gun, you know, as a joke, right? Just really unaware of social nuances. That's my feeling for him, that he was removed in an odd sort of way. I don't think he was creepy. I don't get that, but I do get that he was emotionally reviewed, which would make killing his children and his wife that much easier, I guess, for him. Just horrible, horrible thing to do to them, honestly. But you can see it. You can see this guy begin to kind of spiral down because the world doesn't understand him and he doesn't understand the world. And his wife, who was someone that he had always depended on to be there, even though that they didn't have a quote unquote happy marriage, I don't know that Robert would have ever been able to clearly define a happy marriage. So if she was leaving him, this person who had been with him since 87 and who understood him better than probably anyone, he'd be kind of lost in the world, you know? So I think he fully intended to kill his family, but not be there. I think that he didn't want to suffer the pain of killing himself or blowing up. So I think that he went for a quieter death by hanging himself. And the other interesting thing just for me was when they made note that Blue was under the car, guarding the car, I was like, thank God he didn't hurt the dog. Right? Like, it can handle lots of stuff, but if an animal is hurt, I'm undone. I'm completely undone. So
actually, I think he saved the dog, right? He took the dog with him to
absolutely
keep it from the fire.
Absolutely. Because this dog didn't care that he was weird. The dog didn't care that he was off, didn't care that he was unable to connect. So this was a creature that understood him and didn't reject him. So very sad. I doubt highly that they will ever find his remains. I think he died within a few days of the explosion. I don't think he took a long time to think about it. I doubt he went hunting and tried to stay alive. Like, there just isn't that in the ether that he had any will beyond getting away from the house far enough to be able to die a quote unquote quiet death. I think that he was absolutely determined not to go to jail, not to be held accountable for the crimes. I think that probably would have terrified him. So he took matters into his own hands and exerted control where he had it. I don't believe he escaped to Guatemala. I don't believe that he left the country. How would he do that? Did he walk? You know, I mean, like, that's a long way. On $280 or however much money he had in his wallet. None of that really makes sense. And there was a statewide manhunt for him and people were on the lookout, and he was a pretty easily distinguished person. He wasn't unattractive. He was fairly attractive. So he would have called some attention to himself. And I just don't get the feeling at all that he even entertained the idea of escaping to another country or trying to go on the lam or trying to disappear. Plus, this happened in 2001. It's almost impossible to disappear now. But it's been impossible to kind of disappear for about 30 years, you know? So I don't get that he fled to another country. That just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. It's much harder than I think people think it would be, much harder. So I did see, though, there was something online, I think on YouTube, where they interviewed the former detective and the current detective on the case. And the former detective drew the exact same conclusion that I did. You know, he committed suicide. He's gone. We'll never find the remains. The other one was, I think that he could still be living. And I'm like, he's not. But they were talking about having found someone in Canada who had a remarkable similar appearance to Robert. And the guy had a scar on his shoulder, the same as Robert had from surgery. And there was like another very distinct thing that I forget what it was. But they ran the fingerprints, and the fingerprints don't lie. They were not Robert's. And there's no way to fudge your fingerprints, right? You can't just put on new fingerprints. So he was ruled out. But it's interesting how this case 20 years later is still kind of pretty active and drawing a lot of attention and a lot of curiosity. For me, he's gone, done, bye-bye. So, and it was shortly after he murdered his family, which is really sad. We would have loved to have seen him come to justice for that. But there's also something I think, honestly, there's also really something tragic about this guy, because I just don't feel he ever fit in. And the only way he was able to fit in was to circle himself with a family, a loving family. So when she was threatening to go and leave him without that buffer, so she and the kids were a buffer to the rest of the world, I don't think he could face it. So there is this kind of, like, I'm not sympathetic with him. I mean, he murdered his family, but I can kind of understand.
Well, from his perspective, that was a logical thing to do.
Right. Right. How he was seeing the world as forever changed the moment she decided to leave him. Mm-hmm. And there's no doubt in my mind that she was like, she announced it to him that night, like, we're done. I'm filing in the morning or whatever. And he was like, okay, this is real now. So that's it. That's all she wrote. So very sad. What do you think, Sans? What do you think happened? Did you get a feeling?
No, I don't ever get a feeling. Usually I look at it just from, you know, the way the case has been written up. I didn't necessarily, again, you're colored by what you read. So I would not have pieced together that he might have suffered from Asperger's or some kind of personality disorder. I looked at it literally like, this is weird behavior. He's off his rocker. Based on the way you're describing it, it makes more sense to me what transpired. And why he was motivated to do what he did. Again, it's not sympathy. It's just, okay, I understand it. Right. I agree. He probably did commit suicide. I think it's very difficult to disappear without a trace for this long of a period. But when you go deep into the woods, yeah, it's easy to hide and disappear per se. Yeah.
I don't think he made it to the reservation either. I don't think he intended to head there at all. And the reason the reservation wasn't searched is because it's a reservation. So yes. It's its own nation. So local law enforcement can't go on without an invitation. But I didn't feel that he went there anyway. I feel like he went to a spot that he was familiar with, that he knew he probably would never be found, climbed a tree and fell off.
Yeah.
Cut a noose around his neck and fell off. So from that perspective, I don't see how he would ever be found, because it's been 20 years and the critters have done their thing. So yeah. I don't think there's anything left, honestly.
Probably not. Yeah.
Right.
So, well, thank you for your impressions. Yes.
I say my pleasure, and it's really not my pleasure. It's really kind of, but still.
Well, and this is the last of the missing men in our series. So we'll turn to a couple of new topics in the oncoming weeks. But thank you, everyone, always for tuning in. And definitely check out whenever. And definitely write a review if you feel compelled. It's very difficult for self-published authors these days. So any support possible would be great. And we do know that it's another great read and another great story by Victoria Laurie, the prolific author of 955 million books. So,
or 39, but who's counting?
So I'm going to go back to reading Coaching Fire,
cool.
Which we'll be promoting in what, six? When does that come out?
November of 20, November of this year.
Oh, thank goodness.
Yeah. There's a long lead time. Yeah. You know, and what the reason why we have so much time is because I finally delivered a manuscript on time. They said it couldn't be done. And I did it. Last minute, Lori has written her last late manuscript. So
okay, you guys heard it.
On the
you heard
ball.
It here. You heard
on
it
the ball.
Here.
I've already started the new one. That's not even due until next August, August of 2024. I've already started it. So yes, I'm determined not to be late anymore.
Okay, good. Like that.
Anyway, all right, since thank you so much for this write-up. This was really a fascinating case. And really well written and researched as always. Love you. Mean
love
it.
Love you too. Thank
always.
You. Thank you.
Thanks
too.
For the editing. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely.
I'm really curious about what the thing is that I missed too. So like, just send me a text, let me know. And I'll be like, curses. So no, I'm just going to wait for your notes. Awesome. Awesome. Thank you for that. Thank you.
My tiny opportunities to take advantage. That's all. Yeah, I'll send you a text. No problem.
All right. Sounds good. All right. Love you.
Love you too. Thank you, everyone.
Bye.